I'm delighted to be joined now by Paul Norton. Paul is an RNIB connector who was born with an eye condition which would have a big impact in his life and bizarrely wasn't diagnosed until Paul was an adult. So Paul, let's start at the very beginning. Were you aware from an early age you had an eye condition?
Yeah, well, all I thought right from my school life, right through to early working life, was that I had was short-sighted. That was it. I mean, I knew I had this flickering eyes, but I didn't realise the impact of it. Nobody ever explained it to me at all.
And did you go to mainstream school?
Yes, right from the word go. Infant school, junior school, secondary school. In those days, they didn't understand anything about eyesight and about visual impairment. A lot of stuff was put down to I was just stupid.
I would imagine that could have a real effect on a child being told that.
Well, it did. In those days, everybody, parents, teachers, officials like police officers, they give you a clip round the ear. Things were more physical then. And I unfortunately experienced quite a lot of physical punishment because of things I couldn't do and didn't do. And I was constantly told off and thought of being as naughty.
So what effect did that have on you? Did it make you withdraw further into yourself?
I don't know if it made me withdraw. It made me feel different. You see, my mum tried to protect me, whether it's to do with my eyesight, but she thought she was doing the best thing. So I didn't actually have any interaction, except with my two youngest brothers. I didn't have any interaction with other children properly until I was 5 years old. And my first day at school, she was telling me, "You're going to school," took me into school and left me. And that was the most traumatic memory. That's my first memory, really.
Is that when the anxiety started, Paul?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was horrible. And then the whole career at school, right through until 18, was, I think you know, it was a frightening world.
So you weren't given any mobility training or receive any assistance because of your sight condition?
Oh, no, nothing at all. Other than glasses to correct my eyesight. And at school, I was made to do all sorts of things that everybody else did. And so I was treated like everybody else. And I just tried to behave like anybody else, act like anybody else. So when we did things like sport, I had to play cricket, rounders, football, all these games, and you're supposed to take your glasses off. So I couldn't see much with my glasses, but without my glasses, the number of times I was hit and I was thumped, and in the end, it wasn't until I was 15, and somebody kicked a rugby ball, it landed right in my groin, and I swelled up and ended up in hospital, that they realised there's something more to my eyesight. And they sent me for testing, would you believe? The school said to my parents, "No, we need a referral to the doctor, you know, to the eye specialist."
And what came back?
I'm not quite certain what came back, but I had it was called a nystagmus, and that's when they first identified I wasn't very good in certain light. I had photosensitivity. And that helped me in, because this is pre-GCSE, as we call it here, and they took it into account when I was marked. But what they should have done, should give me longer, and not put me in an exam room that was full of sunlight.
Did this affect your marks?
Oh, yes, it did. Certainly affected my marks, yes, it did. But I actually managed to probably pass more and get more marks because of the report from the eye hospital.
So what did you do when you eventually left school, Paul?
I left school and went to college to train as a teacher. It was sort of an expectation that I would do something to do with music, because I loved music. I think it's just something my mum wanted me to do, actually. But
yeah.
But I did go and be trained to be a teacher. And that course did me a lot of good, that 3 years. But right from the word go, because one of the features of my school life was I was bullied, but not just by my peers, but by my teachers. I had a considerable amount of fun being made of me. This is one of the features of my school life right through. It was that being the way I was treated by teachers that was really, really awful. So I went to college and it was a different place altogether.
For the better?
Yes, it was much better, because so none of the lecturers made fun of me. I lived on campus with other blokes and they treated me as equal, except for one lad at the beginning of the course. He started to mimic me because I peered at things and I used to sort of look close at things.
Yeah.
And I turned round to him, and I realised in that instant I had to do something. And I said to him, you've got it too, have you? I was born like it. What's your excuse?
Well done.
And the whole group just laughed, and he looked really embarrassed. And nobody ever made fun of me or made any comments again.
So it felt like a turning point in your life, standing up for yourself?
That did, actually. And that's one of the few times that I realised I had to make a stand there. I really, really had to.
Now, on top of all of this, Paul, you also had tinnitus affecting your ears, didn't you?
Poor sense of smell and tinnitus. People with my eye condition often are affected by the ears and the nose. And it comes down to something about the neural transmitters and the way that the nerves are linked to the different organs. For instance, the eyes are linked by the muscles and nerves, the brain. There's something faulty there. That's where the genetic mutation has taken place. So I went through right into college and right into working life with all this. And I remember having to make sure, because somebody said, "Poor Paul, you smell." And I didn't realise until I left home that I just couldn't smell properly. And therefore, I had to make sure I washed my clothes and washed myself thoroughly every day. So that, again, was a good little wake-up call, really. So it has been difficult, you know, doing cooking and doing all sorts of things when you can't smell. I mean, there's nothing more than my sense of taste, fortunately, or as far as I know. Right from when I started cooking as a student and when I first left and when I did my first job in sharing a house with other people, my first job teaching, you know, it was quite awful. Nobody realised, and I didn't realise, the difficulties that would be in the kitchen. I couldn't smell very well. I couldn't see very well. And if the light over the stove wasn't very good, I had terrible trouble, and I ended up with terrible eye strain and eye fatigue, doing all sorts of simple tasks right throughout the years.
It's an incredible amount of bad luck to have so many different problems, and I can fully understand where your anxiety and stuff came from. It's horrendous, some of the things that have happened, and the bullying on top of that. After you got the job working in the school, Paul, and you'd stood up for yourself, you went on from school to work in the Church of England as well. How was that?
Yes, I mean, I did work in schools, and I was a music teacher and became a freelance musician, and I was involved in my local church a lot, musically and in other ways, pastorally in other ways. And after about 10 years of working, I felt a sense of all I can sort of being drawn into. And I actually, part of me didn't want to do this because I really admired the vicar of the church where I was at in North London. But I thought I wouldn't want his job because I could see how challenging it was dealing, you know, with people in the local community and dealing with various issues. But I nevertheless felt a sense of drawing to this. And so, cut a long story short, I spoke to my vicar. I was married at the time, and this is early 1980s now. And I went through a prelection process, and I was successful in being, you know, going to training at college in London for 3 years. And then I began in 1986 working in various capacities in the Church of England right through until 2007 when I had to take early retirement. So I was involved in the church in London, in Luton, in Coventry, Bedworth area, back in Hitchin, and then to Portsmouth. Although I worked in the local churches there, I was very involved, and a lot of my work was with it, with education and with music and working with children and young people in local projects.
What's incredible to me, Paul, is during this time working in the church, you still weren't even registered partially sighted.
It wasn't until I was working in the Midlands, I was working with a social worker on a scheme, and she turned around and said to me, "Reverend Norton, why aren't you registered partially sighted? Why haven't you applied to be?" And I sort of poo-pooed it. And so then I saw Professor Moore, and he told me in 2 minutes, all about my eyesight that he knew and what I was experiencing. I said, "How did you know I did that? How did you know I got headaches? How did you know I got blurred vision? How did you know I was getting disorientated and I couldn't cope in crowds?"
Must have been a real sense of relief that somebody finally understood you, Paul.
That was very emotional, actually. Very emotional. Yeah. So that was the first time that somebody told me in advance and knew what was going on. Given I'm born 1955, this is the late 1990s. When I was actually registered partially sighted officially.
Now, in the year 2007, you had some more bad news, Paul, when you had to stop working.
Right, well, I'd moved to Portsmouth to work in a church in a community and area in Portsmouth. I mean, it was a challenging job, like they all are, but there was less going on in the community. It was a smaller community. I was just dealing with one church as opposed to four or five churches, and there weren't so many issues in the particular community I was in. And I think because of that, it was easier, I suppose, in a sense. There was a lot of stuff. There's a lot more space. And a lot of stuff came to the surface. And I did realize, I started behaving very bizarrely and very strangely and getting very depressed. And so from 2005 to 2007, I had a considerable amount of time off of work. During that time, I was diagnosed with bipolar affective disorder, and I had to take early retirement from ill health in March 2007 and move to where I live now in Southsea in Portsmouth.
That must have been hard for you as well, but from being diagnosed, that's when you would start the counselling, which would give you a lot of answers and clarity in your life.
Well, yes, because over the years, I've had some what's called cognitive behavioural therapy, and that helped and gave a lot of answers, and other patches of counselling. It's only the recent counselling I've had of the last year that has really brought things home. But no, over the years, it's taken a lot of time for the jigsaw pieces to fall into place, because there's a lot of stuff I didn't realise at all. Little things that I should have been wearing wraparound sunglasses for years and years and years. I should have had a signal cane for years and years and years, because I have dry eye syndrome and I didn't realise that for years. I wonder why my eyes are scratchy. I should have been taking eye drops two or three times a day. And it wasn't until the beginning of this year that I was referred by the Queen Alexandra Hospital in Portsmouth to Southampton General, where there's a man called Mr. J. Self, who's doing research into nystagmus, and he's the first person who said, right, I think you need to take seriously making these adjustments in your life. So you need to look at better reactive light lenses in your glasses, you need to wear sunglasses, you need to have eye drops, you need to go into looking at the signal cane. But basically, since then, those things have happened now. I've got these things, and I've had some advice and had some help.
Has that improved your quality of life?
Oh, dramatically. I wish I'd have been more self-aware, because I wasn't. But I was obviously pushing a lot down. Fear, anger, anxiety, whatever it may be. I was not in touch with my own feelings. And that's probably one of the reasons why I had an enormous breakdown.
Yeah, you'd bottled it up for so long.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then it just went boom in 2005 onwards. And it was a real mess, a real explosion really of it.
I could imagine, Paul. But one good thing to come of it, having been through it yourself, is your concern nowadays with issues around awareness and raising awareness of visual impairment of different types.
That's absolutely right. Because I wasn't self-aware in my own life, and I dismissed some things because I wanted to be normal and behave normally, because my fear was that people would treat me differently if I seemed to be weak and vulnerable. So I had to try and compensate a lot, and I worked really hard. I mean, I was a workaholic. I worked really hard. And so I had troubles later in life, and I would want to just help people to see from the word go, people themselves, if they're visually impaired, to become as self-aware as possible, whether it might be through counselling or generally through nurturing from parents, from school, wherever, but also encourage the parent to not be afraid to address the issues that they need to go through for themselves with a visually impaired youngster or youngsters.
Definitely. And you've also benefited as well in the last few years, Paul, from meeting up with other groups of visually impaired people and talking about issues.
That's right. But my son Tom, working for the RNIB in the Midlands, he said to me, Dad, the RNIB has started up these Connect groups, and you would be nearest to RNIB Connect South East. And so I looked online and found out about it, and they had a meeting in Southampton at the end of March. It was the first one, I believe. And that's the first meeting I went to of visually impaired people, of individuals and groups. And pardon the pun, but my eyes were opened, because I'd never been in any groups before where there had been other visually impaired people, not to my knowledge. I was always the one who was visually impaired. I had no idea what it was like to be in a group, and everybody was. And it was such a relief to find people who we could all identify with each other, sympathise, empathise with each other. One simple thing, for instance, the wraparound sunglasses. I mean, I was able to talk to somebody who wore them and who used them, because I was trying to use ordinary sunglasses since January. And she said, look, this is where you can go. And eventually I found my way to a lady called Julie Duffy, who works at the RNIB, I believe. She gave me samples of sunglasses, and then I could use them from there. So
seems such a small bit of throwaway advice, but obviously the massive impact for you.
That's right. And also using and how to use the signal cane and addressing issues of stigma, and realising that I'm not the only one who has had terrible, terrible trouble in crowded places, or where there was poor lighting, inadequate lighting too bright, whatever. And I thought, my goodness, I'm not the only one. And then from that, I met people who live locally in Portsmouth and Havant, Waterlooville, Fareham Gosport, who were part of some local groups. So there's Zoe Hanscombe, who she volunteers the RNIB, works for a group called Open Sight Hampshire, but she runs Solent Active Visually Impaired Group that meets in Havant monthly. We do all sorts of social activities. She introduced me to that group, so I've been going on to Solent Active Visually Impaired Group and then got on to be involved with Open Sight.
Paul, I'm so glad you finally found out about these groups and you're absorbing yourself in them and meeting people and getting the information you should have had all along. What does the future hold for you, though? I believe you're involved in an open mic talent night.
That's right, yes. Well, because of the groups I've been involved with, I was quite staggered to find talent there is artistically, creatively, writing poetry, singing, making jewellery.
Right across the board, isn't it?
Right across the board. And I was really inspired by this. And I thought, well, why don't we have a go? So I made a suggestion to Zoe Hanscombe and the Solent Active Group, and Hazel Cross from RNIB was there as well. So basically, I said, so what about this open night mic talent night for visually impaired people, family and friends? And it could be open to anybody. And people were very enthusiastic about the idea. Because I said, I believe you me, I mean, when we have this and people will come along and you'll see what people can do, I think we will all be amazed.
Paul Norton, thanks ever so much for sharing your story with us. We hope it inspires other people to get involved in their local charities. In the meantime, thank you for talking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Barry. Thank you.
And if you would like to go to Paul's night, it is taking place at the Portsmouth Deaf Centre in Arundel Street, Fratton, Portsmouth, on Friday, October the 26th, from 7 to 9:30. It is open to all in the community, as well as family and friends.